This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Today I'm interviewing Dr. Yunze Ma, who's an employee here at JBCA. Welcome to the Jodcast.
Thank you, and it's my great pleasure to sit here and talk to the people.
No problem. It's going to be really interesting having you talk. So you aren't here for very long, though. You've been here for how long now?
Yes, I've been here for 1 year. So I did my PhD in University of Cambridge with Professor George F. Dasu and finished in 2011. And then I went to University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada to do my postdoc, working with Professor Douglas Scott and Gary Hinshaw.
And we've had him on the show before, I think.
Yeah, we had Douglas before here. He came to visit here and gave a colloquium before.
Yeah.
And then, so last year I moved to University of Manchester as a second postdoc. Here I work with Professor Richard Batty, Professor Clive Dinkinson, and the other professors as well.
And what is it you work on mainly?
Here we work on the so-called 21 centimeter intensity mapping. Sounds a little bit like a particular kind of high tech, but actually its meaning is just trying to map out the neutral hydrogen in the low redshift of the universe by using the radio telescope, such as the future square kilometer array in South Africa and Australia, or the experiment that we are proposing, which is so-called BINGO, B-I-N-G-O, which is supposed to be in Brazil. So basically, we try to map out the neutral hydrogen distribution at low redshift of the universe, and using that distribution to probe whether the dark energy, how does the dark energy dominate at low redshift of the universe, and making the universe accelerate expanding. So we are involving the modeling of the distribution of the 21 centimeter, and also we are involving in the building up the computer technique to pulling out a very weak signal from the received sky we observe from the SKA, etc.
Awesome. So let's do a little bit of jargon busting there for a second. So you look at the 21 centimeter line in a low redshift universe. So a low redshift, that means sort of modern day universe, right? Not too far back in time. What sort of time period are you looking at?
Yeah, so basically for the recent billions of years, not really far away. So after the dark energy started to dominate the universe, we look at that period, which is very recent billions of years.
And for any listeners who aren't familiar with the subject, the universe has three eras, isn't that right? An era where radiation dominates, matter dominates, and dark energy dominates.
Yes. In the very early time of the universe, basically the first 10,000 years, it was the domination of the radiation. And then because radiation just diluted very fast, very quickly, so later on the matter, such as ordinary matter and dark matter, dominated the whole universe. So the major cosmic budget in the medium regime of the cosmic evolution is matter. In the early regime, it was radiation. In the medium regime, it's matter.
Now we've moved on into the new era, which is?
Which is dark energy domination. Basically, because the matter just diluted as the universe is expanding, it's also diluted. But however, the dark energy, so-called the vacuum energy, is keeping on the density to be a constant. So that therefore, at some point, the matter density will drop under the vacuum energy. So that's why we enter into this dark energy dominate. As a result, observationally, the dark energy, which is the so-called vacuum energy, just pushing everything away from us, so making the universe accelerate expanding.
Yes, so this is why we're now accelerating and expanding away from everything else, which is why the sky will be dark. And we'll come to that in a second. So you specialize in lots of cosmological stuff, which is really interesting. And you gave a talk entitled How Much Cosmological Information Can Be Measured. So one of the things I'm sure that lots of listeners are familiar with is the cosmic microwave background and those images that you see from Planck and from WMAP before it of the CMB maps, which look sort of like blue and yellow stippled atlases of the sky, in a sense. Now, we've seen these before, obviously, but could you give us a brief recap on what the CMB is?
Yeah, so the CMB is a term so-called cosmic microwave background radiation. So it is photon. It is a photon from the very early universe, which are basically the so-called relics of the Big Bang. So after the Big Bang, the photon and baryons, etc., they are mixing together as a plasma, like a fluids all together. So the fluids has a sound wave, basically. They just propagate throughout the universe in the speed of a sound wave. But because the universe is expanding, so the temperature is cooling down, at some point, the photons are decoupled with the baryons. So that time scale is roughly about 400,000 years since the Big Bang. After that, the photon, because the photon decouple with the baryon, so the photon will just become relics in the universe. So what we observe in the microwave frequency region is to observe the distribution of such photons. And because the photon decouple with baryon in the early time, and it doesn't really interact with any other matter later in the universe, so we can use a photon as a very good tracer of what happened in the very early universe. And that's why we are interested in the cosmic microwave background.
So is it right to say that that's the earliest light that we can see in the universe?
Yeah, pretty much. Because right now we haven't sort of detected the neutrino. I mean, if we were able to detect neutrino, or if we can detect neutrino in the future, we should be able to see even further, because neutrino decouple with the other matter even earlier than the photon. So if we can really see the neutrino, let's say neutrino is another sort of light, and if we can see the neutrino, then we can probe even earlier. But right now, all of the astronomy is based on the electromagnetic field, spectrum.
Yeah,
so right now, if we can only see the photon, then that's really the earlier light we can see.
Yeah, we've got some experiments going to try and detect neutrinos, but it's quite difficult.
It's quite difficult because very, very weakly interact, and we are not even known these mass and flavor and the, you know, three eigenstate distribution, etc. A lot of very fundamental things still haven't been understood yet. So I think using neutrino as a tool to probe in the early universe is still a little bit mature at the present time. But I mean, who knows? Things happen very fast.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, who knows what the future brings. So back to the CMB. What we see when we look at these maps is we see these, well, they're pretty much like atlases. They're flat oval shapes and they have this red and blue stippling. And this stippling refers to sort of the amplitudes of the photon energy. Is that correct?
Yes. It's basically the temperature of the photon. Basically.
The temperature of the photons. Cool. But one thing that you don't hear very often is, these are like atlases. These are projected onto a 2D plane. And actually, this CMB, it has a thickness, right? Which refers to sort of a length universe.
Yeah, so it has a so-called thickness, roughly about 50 megaparsecs. So megaparsec is another astronomy term. So roughly about mega is 10 to the 6, as you know. Parsec, roughly about 10 to the 26 or so meter, etc. So you can convert that into the real kilometer meters. So it's basically a distance where the photon, it's a horizon size where the photon decouples from the baryons at the time, as I said, 400,000 years when it was decoupled. And this basically is a size where the horizontal universe by the time is. So the photon can travel freely within the horizon, but after that, the photon just become a relic and it can't be interacted with anything else. There is a finite thickness, but however, we can't really see very deeply into that thickness because of the optical depth. I mean, this is another astronomy word. So optical depth means the interaction rate between photon and the other baryons, like the electrons, are pretty high. So the universe before that, it was like a mist, like, you know, like when it's gloomy or it's before it's rainy.
Yeah, you look out in the morning and you can't see very far.
You can't see very far, and that's the same reason as the CMB. So you can't really see into the that thickness of 50 microsecond. All you can see is a two-dimensional sphere where the photon left the interaction with baryons and imprinting on the sky with the hot and cold spot, which are, you know, higher temperature region and lower temperature region.
And the blue spots, the lower temperatures, and the yellow are the higher temperatures. And you had a great analogy which you gave to sort of try and visualize what these things actually are. It was to do with pebbles, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. So if you drop a pebble into a very quiet water pond, and it will make these kind of ripples.
A circular ripple which spreads out.
Yeah, it's a circular ripple which spreads out. This is just like the perturbation. If you make a perturbation in a space-time, such as some random fluctuations, then the perturbation will be propagated. And it's the so-called baryon and photon fluid before the recombination era is exactly like this. So it will propagate at a sound speed, exactly like the ripples propagated when you drop a pebble into a water pond. So that's what we see actually in the CMB sky. We see all of these red and blue spots, and these are the perturbations. And of course, there isn't just one perturbation in the universe.
It's a bit messy.
Yeah, it's a little bit messy. So the whole universe has a lot of random perturbations. But if you stack all of the hotspots all together and cutting down a region around the hotspot, stack all of them together, and if you stack all of the cold spots all together, you will be able to see such kind of ripples, and you will be able to see the so-called characteristic ring around each of the hotspot and coldspot. And that's a typical scale of the baryon crucible oscillation. Basically, how does ripple propagate it from the beginning of the universe?
So it looks more like if you're dropping a fistful of gravel into the water instead, all of these ripples interfere with each other, but then you can recreate the individual ripples by comparing them to each other.
Yes, exactly.
And these ripples, these perturbations, these are weird things. What caused them? Does anyone know?
Right now, our understanding is that the sources of these classical perturbations is due to the early time quantum fluctuation in the early universe. And even though you have a vacuum in the early time, that the vacuum isn't just a very steady sort of status. It always has some fluctuations, always has some jumping up and jumping down.
Virtual particles popping in and out of existence. Yes, sorts of crazy stuff.
Yes, do all sorts of crazy stuff. Sometimes a virtual particle can be created and they could be annihilated later. So the net effect, although is zero, but there could be such kind of process going on and on again. Random fluctuation always exists in the quantum physics. So at early time, this is really the sources of our classical perturbation. Principle, all of our galaxies, all of these giant astronomical structure we see, like the planet, like the stars, like the galaxies, like cluster, etc. If you trace all of them back, they're all due to the quantum fluctuation at early time.
So if you look at one of the ripples in the CMB and it's, say, a hot spot or a cold spot, then what in the universe where that ripple once was, there may now be a galaxy or there may now be a void.
Yes, that provides the seed of fluctuations. The hot and cold spot we see in the CMB roughly represent the perturbation at order of magnitude 10 to the minus 5. And right now we see these big galaxies like our Milky Way, etc., Andromeda, etc. All of these are due to the initial fluctuation from the CMB time.
So you can imagine that small perturbations would attract, if there was a little bit more matter in one area, it would collapse and then it would eventually become a galaxy, or it would eventually become a big dust cloud and that would collapse to galaxies and that sort of thing. Is that how it works?
Yes. This is the whole process go to nonlinear. Basically, if you think about the universe at early time, the universe is almost smooth. But if you have a tiny fluctuation, and then that just creates a little bit more matter. And then as it creates more matter, then the gravitational potential will become bigger and it will attract more matters. So everything eventually will be collapsed.
So over billions of years, it can have a massive effect, which is really cool. And it's really cool that we can learn about it with the CMB. But part of your talk was on how much information can actually be measured. And that wasn't just because of our limitations in technology, but that was also due to the fact that we've got nature working against us in a sort of sense, isn't that right? So eventually we won't be able to see the CMB anymore.
Basically, right now we can see the CMB, no problem. However, as we said, in the future, dark energy dominates our universe. So it just drives the universe accelerating, expanding, making everything far away from us. Basically, we will be very alone in the very far future. So therefore, in the very, very far future, because the CMB photon will be stretched out as the universe is expanding, the wavelengths will be stretched out. So therefore, the effective energy will going down.
And it will become fainter and fainter.
Become fainter and fainter, become colder and colder. And therefore, at very, very, very far future, when the universe is completely dominated by the vacuum energy, the vacuum energy itself has some intrinsic temperature. We call it Gibbons-Hawking temperature. And when the CMB temperature is going to be below that Gibbons-Hawking temperature, then it just completely lost it in the vacuum energy, and we will never be able to see it. And this is so-called Gibbons-Hawking region, or Gibbons-Hawking time, basically, that we will not be able to assess the CMB temperature anymore. But that's really very, very far away, billions of years later, so we don't need to worry for that.
Yeah. We don't have to work too much faster, though it's always something to think about, I guess. But there were some other effects as well, which might actually interfere before then, isn't that right?
Yes, there could be another effect which can make us sort of unable to assess the cosmic structure even earlier than the Gibbons-Hawking region, which is due to the plasma. Because we live in a galaxy and we are surrounded by interstellar medium, and interstellar medium has a fixed frequency because its density of electrons are a constant, basically. So when the CMB photon frequency is going to dropping below the interstellar medium typical frequency, then our galaxy itself provide a screening mechanism for us to probing the early structures.
So the signal from our galaxy will overpower the CMB and we might not be able to see it anymore.
Yes. However, let's just imagine if the smart human being can launch a rocket and to be able to escape from our own galaxy, we are still be able to probe the early universe, although that we are blocked within our own galaxies.
So. Yeah, it'll be the time when we have spaceships outside the galaxy.
It could be, yes.
Oh, we better start working fast on that. How much time do we have before we need those working?
Those also kind of billions of years. We have enough time to work on that all to escape from our own galaxies.
Yeah, we've got to worry about our sun first, I guess.
Yes, I think we should worry for the demise of the sun.
So yeah, luckily, we are working on learning as much as we can at the moment about the CMB and about cosmology in general. And there are lots of brand new experiments on the way, which you've mentioned before. You mentioned Bingo and you mentioned the SKA. Can you tell us a bit more about what they're going to be looking at in terms of cosmology and what's different about them in comparison to what we've got already? What new stuff that we're going to learn?
So all of the purpose of making cosmological observations are to map out the structure in the universe, because the information we can get to understanding the cosmic evolution is mainly derived from those observations which can tell us the structure in the universe. So as we said, the CMB observation is mapping out the early structure, which is a two-dimensional information at very, very high redshift, means very, very early time. And as you know, that Planck satellite launched by European Space Agency, which a lot of people here, including me as a member of, that it has already mapped out the cosmic microwave background in a very high precision. Mm-hmm. So there isn't much space to improve the observations of the cosmic microwave background of the photon in the early time. Of course, there are some other surveys going on, such as Sloan Digital Sky Survey.
Which is a big map of galaxies. It's an atlas of galaxies in the
yes,
sky.
Yes, yes. But it's not full sky mapping. It's only a sort of a quarter of the sky, but goes very deep. But this deep, if you compare with the cosmic volume, is still quite shallow. So all of these surveys, future survey, especially for SKA, like Square Kilometer Array, or the European proposed satellite, so-called Euclid, etc., is going to try to map out the galaxy structure in a much deeper scale, so that we will be able to extract more information of the cosmic evolution from this.
So we can build up a big 3D sort of
eventually, yes,
of how the universe has evolved over time.
Exactly. So we want to not just get the information from the two-dimensional of the cosmic microwave background, but also we want to get information from 3D volume of the universe, such as from the galaxies or just from the gas in the universe.
Ah, cool. And you mentioned the SKA again. The SKA is partially based in South Africa, and that's where you're going to be moving. You're leaving us soon.
Oh, yeah.
You're moving off to South Africa. Can you tell us a little bit about, is it a coincidence that you're going there?
Yes, I think this is a very exciting time, actually, to move into South Africa. So I'm here in Georgia Bank for 1 year, and I moved to South Africa actually next week. So South Africa is building up it's one of the major countries of building the SKA. And what we try to do is try to build up a strong research group of investigating the neutral hydrogen, investigating the galaxies for SKA. So we want to develop a very strong research program in South Africa to really utilize the data to probing the early structure of the universe.
Yeah, you've only been here 1 year, but you're going to be missed for sure. So what university is it that you're moving to?
Yeah, so I'm moving to University of KwaZulu-Natal in Durban. It's one of the top universities in South Africa. And they have been recruiting very very good people recent years to build up a strong astronomy group. And I'm fortunate to join them this year.
Awesome. Well, hopefully you'll come back for a visit and then we can interview you again and see how your research is going on.
Yeah, thank you. And I hope so. And I still keep strong collaboration with Georgia Bank scientists. So I hope I will come back to visit very soon.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And thanks for the interview.
Thank you. Thank you indeed.
Right. Bye.